And while they're doing that, we are going to nose dive right into week three of the series we've been in, Decalogue, the Ten Commandments. 10 weeks, 10 Commandments. We're going to continue that series. It's the third week. If you've missed the first two, again, that's good for context. You can go back to crosspoint.org/messages and get caught up if it occurs to you to do that. If it doesn't, just to remind you, the Ten Commandments, they're in your Bible, so you can also find them there. All right, so I'm an idiot. We're going to jump right in the third commandment, and a couple things I want to say right up front. One, I cannot wait to tell you who I think the third commandment is chiefly for. I don't think it's as narrow as saying it's only for this person, these people. I think it's more robust than that, but I cannot wait to tell you who I think it's primarily for. Second, I want to tell you, this morning's heavy. It really is we're talking about the Ten Commandments, first of all. So each of these weeks carries a certain significance and weight to them. But today is very heavy because it says something about our relationship to God and to people in a very unique way. And I think is pertinent to us as individuals, as a community, as people of faith everywhere. So it's really heavy. So before we get into heavy, I thought maybe we'd start off with a little bit of fun, and then I'll bait and switch and then, you know, be really mean. All right? So that's not how that's going to go. Here's what I want you to do. I want you to shout out the name that comes to mind. Don't use your church voice, actually, and don't raise your hand. Just shout out. Actually, here, that is our church voice, yes? Just shouting. And so do use your church voice and yell out the name that comes to mind when I give you a category, okay? So we'll get started. Civil rights. Keep going. Yeah. Okay, ready? Scientific advancement. Yeah, some good ones there. All right, here's one. Medical breakthroughs. Yeah, good ones. A couple of those I've never even heard of. Very, very well done. All right, here's one. Fashion. What? What'd you say over here? What is that? I thought you said Pier 1. How do I look in wicker? I had a guy first hour, he said, me. And I looked at him and it couldn't be further from the truth. But that's my review. All right, so fashion. What are some other ones? Who? Steven? That's weird. I'll pass that along. Okay, how about this one? Home runs. Hank Ruth. That's pretty much what that sounded like from up here. Hank Ruth, delicious candy bar. All right, let's try this one. Speed. Nice. The other car, right? What else? Speed. Keanu Reeves? We are a cultured group, but I totally agree. Spot on, Keanu Reeves, you have to admit that. How about this? Guitar. What? Stevie Ray Vaughan. I couldn't agree more. Who else? Jimmy Page. Yeah. Santana? Yes. Very good. Okay, so we could keep going, but we're not. A category and a person that go together. You mention a category and names and faces come to mind. You mention a name or you call to mind a face and an entire category comes to mind. They're braided together. They're enmeshed. They're one. One's reputation is connected to the other. It's a beautiful thing that we count on in so many different facets of our life as individuals, as a society, that this person represents all of this, or all of this calls to mind this person or these people. In Genesis chapter 1, something gets stated that I would say cannot be overstated. And we reference the first chapter of Genesis a lot. But this phrase, you really can't find its equal in other documents of written in its time, or really for thousands of years after. I mean, civilized society, the Greeks and the Romans, they still didn't have anything that was such a profoundly beautiful statement, such as is found in Genesis chapter 1, verse 27. It reads like this. You'll be familiar with it. So God created, Elohim created man. The man there's generic, humanity. God created humanity in his own image, in the image of God. There's a Latin phrase for that, imago Dei, the image of God. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. Never before and for millennia since has such a profoundly ground-leveling, humanity-endorsing, God-loving people kind of comment ever been written down. It's huge. It's an absolutely huge statement. Human beings, something about their essence, different from the rest of creation, all creation really, it's all the same stuff in different combinations. You and I are made of, we're not much different than watermelons and a possum and a cloud. All the same kind of stuff. But something profound and beautiful has been breathed into us, and it's God's likeness, his very spirit breathed into us, animating us in ways that's just very, very different from anything else. And so your worth on your worst hair day, ladies, your worth on the worst, most embarrassing moment socially, men, my brothers and sisters, on your worst day, your worth doesn't budge, because your worth is tied to ultimate worth. Male and female, he created them in his image, according to his likeness. Something about our essence, nature, it resembles, is derivative of, it calls to mind God. So when you think of God, you think about people. And you think about people, well, it calls to mind God. They're braided together. God knew this. God knew this is a forever. When I make people forever, I'm connecting myself to them. So in Genesis chapter 3, the fall of mankind, they're supposed to have an orange, but they have an apple, and everything goes down the tank. What you have is people going with they're going to go with their gut. Hey, this is really appealing intellectually. It'll make me wise, make me smart. It's going to open my eyes. It looks tasty. And so they reject what God had said, and they go and they do their own thing. Now, this obviously has a historical connotation to it, but the weight of the story is present tense. Yeah. My worst regrets were issues of wisdom or issues of impulse. I don't look back on my worst day and say, man, was I a naughty little boy that day? No, I was an idiot. I was a fool. Why did I choose something so small? Impulse, going with what seems right and thinking that we're no more than the sum total of our urges, like an animal. Man, so much of our life gets run into the ground that way. And this is the primordial human story. This is how it begins. Because that's so many of us, that's how early parts of our own story begin. And so when you see Adam and Eve, no longer do you think Elohim. Now you think Elohim and regret, fearful hiding, shameful fig leaf wearing. Within one generation, murder, violence, pettiness, worry, manipulation, selfishness, control or attempt of control of others. Now when you look at a human being, you don't just think of their maker, you think of these other things. Now, the reputation of both God and people has a big stain on it. So, God makes a promise to Abraham. I'm going to turn it all around through you and your seed. Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, all the Jewish people, they find themselves in slavery. They're called out of slavery after hundreds of years. And they're finally crying out to God, brings them out. They're at the base of Mount Sinai. Moses goes up to give them Torah, the guidance, the light, the way that contains commandments, prohibitions, and then there's a whole list of do's as well. This is what it means to be a people of God. And the whole thing is encapsulated in this idea of covenant renewal. reconciliation, redemption. See, re is always pointing backward. Hey, what God originally intended, what I actually wanted was for people to be connected to each other and to me in shalom, deeply connected to each other as loving expressions of the divine. Covenant renewal. And so within that, we get the Decalogue, the Ten Commandments that summarize the whole of Torah. Exodus chapter 20, verse 7, the third commandment. You shall not misuse the name of the Lord your God, for the Lord will not hold anyone guiltless who misuses his name. Many of you learned this from an early age. You shall not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain. How many, that sounds familiar? Yeah. So there's some traditional interpretations of what this means that have a ton of merit. Because traditionally, many of us from a very young age were taught that what this command means is don't use God's name as a cuss word. Don't use God's titles or his name or the Son of God's titles or names and insert it into a place where another common, regular, everyday word would go. Some of us maybe by extension learned, yeah, and you don't swear to him either. Jesus even said, just let your yes be a yes and your no a no. Anything else just comes from a really evil place. A manipulative, dark, you can't really trust you kind of place. And so many of us have learned that what this is getting at is do not disrespect God by turning his name or his titles into one of your everyday words. And so we joke around, you're breaking the third commandment when you yell out Jesus' name after you miss a putt. You've perhaps missed the significance of Jesus' name. Now, listen, I think that traditionally, that is a very, very wise, good thing. I think that human nature loves to say, well, if this is true, then this is true, and then this is true, and we create patterns. And so if God's name or his titles are something cheap, everyday, common, then probably God is. And pretty soon, it's not just God's name, it's really who he is, his very character, that gets added into our kind of daily, everyday, common kind of vernacular. And then life, God becomes something on a list of things that I just used to kind of talk about me. God is no longer holy, which means other, set apart. God is just one of the things that I have in my life. I do this. Oh, there's God and some of this. So it's very, very wise for there to be this traditional sense of do not use God's name in a way that you would use one of your other words to express. Now, some of the Jews, they went all the way to, fearful of doing this. Instead of writing God's name, they would put just two little marks. So, when you see that's God's name, don't say it out loud. We know who we're talking about. The traditional Orthodox faithful way of saying God in Hebrew is Hashem, which means the name. So literally they refer to God as you know who. Let's not say it. Let's not say the name. Only one person, one time a year, can actually say the name. It's too holy, too sacred. That's all to protect people from taking lightly, not just God's name, but by extension, who and what God actually is. So there's merit to a traditional rendering of don't take the Lord's name in vain. Now, literally, I want you to know that this text, you shall not misuse the name of the Lord, is literally, you shall not carry, that literally carry or bear, it's translated that way in other Old Testament Hebrew places, the same word. You shall not carry or bear the name of Yahweh. God's not his name, it's a title. You can give that title all kinds of things. Yahweh, the actual name, the great self-existent one, the great I am, you shall not carry the name Yahweh empty or emptily. You will not carry around God's name, his character, his reputation. And in the way that you do that, empty it of what it actually is. Now, this is said to a people who are very used to carrying things throughout the desert. And this is a people who know in covenant renewal that they are representative to the world. Remember, this is God's promise to Abraham. All the world will be blessed because of you and your people. This is a people who know what it means to carry things as representations of something far more significant. And God says, as you're carrying things, you will not carry my name and empty it in the manner that you do it. You will not. We, Friday, got some of the staff families together and all of our kids and got together and played some games. We called it Staff Family Olympics. So there were these different little games that we played, and running and scooters and relays, all that stuff. It was fun. And so, but 2 days prior to doing it, we're kind of building up the hype in the Doherty house, and all three kids are sitting at the table, and I said, kids, guess what is in 2 days? What? Staff Family Olympics. And my eldest 10-year-old, this is her exact response within a second. She goes, oh, so we're all going to be doing steroids? So my eldest daughter is a grizzled, cynical old man, apparently. And I said, Emma, what's a steroid? And then she told me, and she was right. I was like, where in the world did this happen? Christy, get in here. She, in her own way, grabbed onto just enough of the stain. The misdeeds of just a few people that are also braided to the category, and the whole thing means something else to her. And like you, the are you kidding me sense of, no, there's this whole other thing that means. For her, that's what it's come to reflect. That's what it means. An entire category can be tarnished by the participants of that category. And we know that that's true. We know that that's true. And God says, third command, you will not lift up, carry, bear my name, and then empty it of its power and its beauty by misrepresenting me, by attaching my name to your stuff. See, the third command does something. It does a lot of things, but one of the things that it does, it's an amazing thing that it does, because it shows us just how powerful your life is, just how powerful our decisions, our thoughts, our words actually are, that they have representative power of God. Jesus says in his last discourse before he is arrested, and that during the Last Supper, he's saying some things to his followers, the disciples, and he makes this monumental statement, John chapter 13, verse 35. By this, everybody's going to know that you're my disciples, my students, my followers, my mimics, if you love each other. People are going to look at you the way that you guys treat each other. This is Jesus speaking to a small group of people, but it's being written down for a reason. The way that you love each other, that is going to tell people that you're different. That is going to tell people that I didn't come to start yet another religion. That is going to tell people that this is the real deal. People are going to say, I don't know what they know, and what they do know, I don't even know how they came to learn it. Here's what I do know. They are different, and I want to be part of it. I don't know what I'm going to have to go through. I don't know what I'm going to have to learn. I don't know what all of that is. But here's what I know. The way they care about each other, they're compassionate for each other, they're gentle with each other, they're humble among each other. I want to be numbered among that lot. I want to be part of it. Jesus says, this is how they're going to know you're mine. Do you understand? This is why this is so monumental. Jesus is saying, I'm tying my reputation to your behaviors. People are going to think of me and reference your love for each other. It says the third commandment. God, entrusting his actual character, not how we talk about it, come to get used to representing it or misrepresenting it. His actual character is and has always been tied to the behavior and the deeds and the attitudes and the words of his followers. They will know you're different, that you're mine. My name will be brought to light by the way that you represent me. That's how that works. Now, at risk of being cynical, we have to ask some tough questions. Because just as I can stand here and say, what are the names that come to mind when I say home run or guitar or medical advancement? What are the words that come to mind when you hear Christian or church or faith or Jesus? And all too often, it's judgmental attitudes. No. Jesus said we'll be known by our love. No, it's arrogance, narrow-mindedness, condemnation, a sense of being threatened by things that aren't easy to understand or things that are new or contradictory to long-held beliefs and ideas. Ugly. Hateful. Selective. This sin, bad. This sin, the one we have, not so bad. Argumentative. They will know you by your love. These aren't things I read in a book. I have these conversations all the time. Argumentative. Yeah, Christians, aren't they the ones that seek out comment sections online just to air their ideas and their condemnations? Everywhere. Now, some of you right now are going, wait. This maybe works in a sermon so we can all ruffle each other's feathers. Okay, but what about all the good? And that's my question too. What about all the good? Because there's probably, very likely, more good than bad. People naturally grade underdogs on a curve. The issue isn't that the third command is God saying, hey, if you're going to be a person of faith, you have to be perfect. You can't sin at all. You have to be a perfect human being. Because then there's no need for the other 9 commandments. Don't sin. That pretty much covers it. We're good. The third command is don't put your opinions, your agendas, and my name in the same hand. The issue isn't being sinless. The issue is having all of those struggles and sins and then positioning yourself as having none of those struggles. And so let's focus on everybody else and controlling their behavior. And thus saith the Lord, this is why this is bad. Opinionating in God's name. The third commandment is about bearing God's name and emptying it, because what it really is our agenda, our likes and dislikes. Followers of God are supposed to be the most humble, gentle, caring, understanding, link arms with you, walk through anything people on the planet, not people who empty God's name of its beauty by attaching it to our own hypocrisy. The second you start explaining the world in terms of you sin and God's against that, our sin, well, I'm not perfect, just forgiven, and God's more gentle with it. As soon as you start doing that, you confuse the issue and you break the third commandment. As soon as you start inserting your understandings of God and things you heard from this person, to explain away mystery and things that we often forget can't be known, as soon as you do that, you risk, if not fall headlong, into breaking the third commandment. And God says, do not carry my name alongside your ideas. Don't say that I feel, think, or said this when I didn't. That's from you. We have to face the fact that Jesus in the Gospels only gets angry when he's confronting religious sinners for trying to represent God's judgments and conclusions to irreligious sinners. God's anger is only towards those that say, let me tell you what God is like, what he's thinking and what he wants from you, and lays this heavy, critical, judgmental, condemning burden on others and doesn't do the humble, loving, interpersonal business of dealing with their own stuff. Jesus's anger is pointed at those who break the third commandment and attach God's name to their own likes and dislikes and their own agendas and says, this is what God wants for you. And exempt themselves from the whole thing. That's what makes Jesus angry in the Gospels. And we have to face that. How many times has there been a tornado in the Midwest ruining people's lives, and somebody takes it upon themselves to say on TV, to blog about it, it's because, and then they list off some policy that was passed, some governor that's been elected or should have been, some political position, some stance, here's why this tornado happened. God is judging X, Y, and Z. Here's why all those birds died. Here's why there was a hurricane. Here's why there was an earthquake. Here's why there was a tsunami. These people's deficits, this, thus saith the Lord. And God says, don't you dare attach my name to your wild, self-centered, self-biasing condemnation. Don't you dare tell people that that's coming from me. And see, the thing is, it's easy to point fingers at those people. But we have to ask how we do this. Well, I had good intentions. I was trying to help. But we have to understand, when you insert explanations into people's lives, trying to explain away reality by saying what God is trying to tell you, all God is trying. When you do that and you speak for God, you better be sure you're speaking for God. Because if not, even with good intentions, you smash the third commandment. When people go through a tragedy, when they go through a crisis, the loss of a job, the loss of a thing, the loss of a person, you can, because of your desperate fear of the unexplained, the desperate fear of mystery, you can, with good intention, step in and break the third commandment by saying, I think what God is trying to do is test your faith to see if you'll trust him through this. I think what's happening is God is trying to make you face some past sins. I think this thing that has you crippled right now, the thing that you're grieving, I think that God is just testing to see if you'll trust him all the way through it. I think God is trying to teach you a lesson. And I always ask, well, what's the lesson? There's always a blank stare, because God apparently forgets to tell us what the lesson is. Just learn it. I just had a guy come to me first hour. He said it reminded him of when he was younger and his mom died. And somebody with good intention said, you know, I think God just wanted a choir director in heaven. The picture of God that paints. God selfishly took, because he decided that's where the real value would be found. See, even with good, it doesn't have to be some mean-spirited talking head. It can be us in our desperate fear of not knowing, that we insert meaning, we insert God. And when we do that, we shape how people see God. We shape how we see God. And God says, do not do it. Trying to insert meaning into something we can't otherwise find meaning, we're threatened by that. What if this is, if it's chaos? This can't be random. And we feel threatened by that. And so we tie God's name to our own creativity. Trying to get people and their actions back in order. I can't believe you guys live this way. It worries me. It disgusts me. I don't agree with it. And so here is my interpretation. I'm going to speak for God. And I'm going to come after it and put God's name on this. But it doesn't smack of God. It smacks of somebody's limited understanding and inability to cope with differences. Sometimes it's us expressing our fears or our hurts. Sometimes it's us just really expressing that we don't understand. Sometimes it's just us trying to put some order where chaos seems to be reigning. But oftentimes, you know what it is. It's us just admitting we hate faith. I'm going to make this a knowledge issue because faith just doesn't give me any kind of center or any kind of control. And so I'm going to explain, judge, and do all of that. But I'm going to stamp Jesus, God, on it. And in so doing, we shape how people will see or refuse to look anymore at God for the rest of their lives. Because before long, God becomes a cosmic endorsement for our own agendas. Before long, God becomes just a way of stamping our own likes, dislikes. Before long, God becomes the sum total of just our own opinions. God becomes the God of powerful influencers, of people that very consistently, they have the microphones and the blogs and they write the books or they have the voice in the family. And before long, God becomes their God and not anybody else's God because their behaviors don't align with he or she and their God. And pretty soon God is no longer for the underdog, just the powerful. Pretty soon love gives way. And God becomes a representation of selfishness and the attempt to control others. See, it's just this simple. Before long, God becomes the creation of man. And Genesis 1:27 is just flipped on its head. It does a 180. In the beginning, man created God in his image. And God says, don't do it. Michelangelo was hired to paint the Pope's house. Pretty cool gig. Pretty significant gig. And so there's this giant fresco in the Sistine Chapel, and we're all at least vaguely familiar with it. Some of you, you've seen it firsthand. These beautiful pictures and beautiful representations of biblical stories. Well, Michelangelo, he does something very interesting in the kind of iconic picture of God lifted up by the cherubim, and he's got Eve under his arm, and he's reaching out to touch the finger of a newly created Adam, the spark of life, to begin this life. It's actually called the creation of Adam, and it's been used in so many iconic kinds of ways. Well, somebody, a doctor, very familiar with human anatomy and physiology in 1990, went and looked at it and said, hey, did anybody else notice this? Notice the shape, the strange shape of the orientation of God and the veil and even the placement of his body, the God anatomy. By the way, God's got a great beard. The angels' faces, all of that, that they are very representative of a cross-section of a human brain. That what Michelangelo might have been doing, because this was a movie back then, this is how you made subversive statements, what he may very well have been doing, the most gutsy move ever, is saying God is a product of the human mind. His creative arm reaching right through the prefrontal cortex that we're all using right now. That Michelangelo, not only showing some of the most intestinal fortitude art has ever seen, that he's going to put this on the Pope's ceiling, but also making a statement you and I have made. It doesn't sound like God sometimes. Not in an arrogant sense, not, oh, I'll know God when I hear him. But sometimes what people say is God or God's will or God speaking, really what it sounds like is the fearful, manipulative control of human beings. And see, I've recently realized I've never been an atheist. I've never been an atheist. Before I was a Christian, I still believed that there was a God and that there was life and that there was beauty. But so often when I would hear it presented to me in a condemning sense of, you got to stop doing this and God hates this. And if you even think this, it's a sin. And here's how you account for that sin. And here's how you're supposed to feel about it. And here's what you're allowed to say and think and all this. And I think in my younger mind, what I was saying is, no, I still believe in God. It's just when it comes out of your mouth, it sounds like it's actually come out of your head only. And so many of us, that's exactly where we're at. It's not that I'm an atheist. It's that it just doesn't sound like a God. It sounds like something far less. So for the next couple minutes, I'll come back up here in a minute. But for the next couple minutes, I want to hit the pause button. And I want to confess. I want us to confess. You don't have to confess out loud. I just want to meditate and think about this principle. Of God saying, I don't want you putting your junk under my name. It's going to confuse people. It's going to misrepresent me. It's going to stain everything. You keep your agendas and your stuff out of my way. Do not misrepresent me. Some of us, we need to realize that we've, with a good heart, we've done that because we're so scared to not have answers. We're so scared to not know where to come out on this God stuff that we'll just make any explanation will do. Some of us, we've done it because there are sins that we don't struggle with, which makes them automatically worse. These people, those, us, them, we do that. We don't mean to. It was taught to us by our parents and they from their parents and all that. But we need to understand that we've been speaking for God or understanding issues under God's name. And we've broke the third commandment. Some of us need to confess our involvement in some measure with that. But you know what? Some of you, my brothers and sisters, you just need to hear faithful people confess. Because your limited ability to step toward God is really because you've got so many ideas presented to you, and all of them said that it was God said it. Jesus said it. He feels it. For the next couple minutes, on either side of this confession, let's just be really honest, and then we'll close. Thank you. There's many people that would say that, I don't really trust organized religion. I don't know what title I would put on myself. I don't know that I would call myself a Christian. I think Jesus is all right, but I kind of keep all that at arm's length. I try to be a good person. I try to tap into my spirituality, but I kind of keep all of that stuff at arm's length. And the reason so often that that is said, that that's felt, expressed, and lived, is because somebody put a bunch of junk in your way and stamped Jesus on it. The reason is that somebody spoke for God, but it didn't sound like God. The reason is that somebody spoke dutifully for God, but very blatantly didn't live their lives for God. They were more concerned with other people's behaviors than their own. They lived out Jesus' words about pointing out the sawdust in somebody else's eye and ignoring the plank in their own. See, It wasn't that they had flaws. It wasn't they were imperfect. In fact, that would have, ideally, that had been helpful. Man, those faithful people, man, they never claim to be perfect. They never claim to be without flaws. They're just really humble. They're just really gentle. The issue wasn't that they had flaws or imperfections. It's that they broke the third command. I told you I couldn't wait to tell you who I thought this was for. And I think the third commandment is for all of us, but I think it's primarily for those who are far from God. I just keep my distance from that. I think the third command is chiefly for those of us that would describe ourselves that way, so that we would never be confused about what comes from the mind of people in control or people who are scared to lose control, even with good hearts. They just can't stand the idea of not knowing or being able to explain things away, that people would never confuse that with the beautiful, gracious God of all heaven and earth that invites all of us into his arms for redemption, reconciliation, and knowing that we're all made in his image. I think it's chiefly for those of us that would describe ourselves that way. My dear brothers and sisters that go by the title of Christ, you're a Christian. You are not condemned. You're loved. And you're encouraged to remember that we will be known by our love for each other. That obviously has direct implications for how we love others as well. That we're to be known by our love, that we're be known by the fruit of the Spirit. That means the evidence of the Spirit, love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness or trustworthiness, gentleness, goodness, self-control. That's the evidence that the Spirit is at work. That's what we're to be known by. My dear brothers and sisters, may you be reminded of that beautiful fact. That's what we're known by, not our stances and positions and trying to do away with the mystery, controlling others' behaviors and not ourselves. That is what we are to be known by. That's the kind of life we're invited into. To my brothers and sisters, that you wouldn't use that title. That's not how you describe yourself. May you feel Jesus's draw and invitation past the rubble of a broken third commandment and into his redeeming arms. May you, maybe for the first time in this moment, actually see that Jesus is different than all the stuff his name has been stamped on. May you know love. And may the name of Christ be known purely in Christians. May we bear and carry the name of our Savior with humility and courage and honesty about what we are and what we aren't, and be known by his very character. Because it's then that the world will never be the same. Go disturbed and go in peace. We'll see you next week.